This episode is brought to you by Sterling Soap Company. Fellas, you've heard the phrase, look good, feel good, right? But why not add smell good to that too? That's where Sterling Soap Company comes in. First, Sterling Soap is 100% natural and has a wide variety of bath soaps, shave soaps, beard balm, lotions, and cologne. Second, there's a scent just for you. How about burgundy? Yeah, it's more than a color. The Sterling Soap folks blend natural essential oils with hints of mahogany, golden amber, and sandalwood. Or how about D503, an intensely masculine scent inspired by Legend by Mont Blanc. And third, you will feel good about the price. For just a little more than you'd pay at the grocery store, Sterling Soap will leave you feeling clean, refreshed, and ready for whatever's next. Give Sterling Soap a try today. Visit sterlingsoap.com. This day in sports history. It's April 16th, and on this day in 1976, Ontario's Attorney General Roy McMurtry issued arrest warrants for three Philadelphia Flyers for assault for fights in an NHL playoff game the previous night. So this wasn't exactly a one-off event, and it wasn't even the first time that an NHL player had been charged for violence in a hockey game. As the top cop in Ontario, though, McMurtry had been concerned about the escalating violence in hockey. In fact, his brother William had researched and written a report about the prevalence of violence in minor league hockey, with the idea that the increasing violent behavior at lower levels was being modeled by players in the NHL and the World Hockey Association. And the big concern was assault and benches clearing for all-out brawls. McMurtry's action on this day was precipitated by a horrible incident in a WHA game a few weeks prior between the Calgary Cowboys and the Quebec Nordiques. The Nordiques' top scorer, Mark Tardif, suffered a concussion after an altercation with Calgary's Rick Giazio. After Giazio knocked Tardif to the ice and apparently unconscious, Giazio continued to pound Tardif. Giazio faced assault charges a month later, but the charges were dismissed. McMurtry believed that if hockey could not police itself and protect its players, then the government needed to step in. Well, on this day, arrest warrants were issued for Flyers Don Selesky, Joe Watson, and Mel Bridgman for their roles in fights in a 5-4 Philly loss. One account of the game from the night before said it was more like hand-to-hand combat than playoff hockey. There were 42 penalties called, 28 against the Flyers, and it took 3.5 hours to play this one. Now, that is an oversimplification of what really happened on this night. There were altercations between players and fans, a policeman got hit in the head with a stick behind the penalty box, and after the game ended, McMurtry was quoted as saying, "I hate to think that it may be necessary to send a hockey player to jail before these people wake up to their responsibility. Hockey has to be the only body contact sport in the world that allows fighting and, in fact, in my view, actively encourages it." When the warrants were issued and the players arrested outside their hotel, Flyers officials and fans all decried the act as a means to disrupt the series in Toronto's favor. Philadelphia's district attorney accused McMurtry of a clear perversion of the office in which he sits. If they were convicted of the crimes in which they were accused, they faced up to 5 years in prison. Eventually, Joe Watson pled guilty and he paid a fine, and the charges against Selesky and Bridgman were dropped. Also on this day, in 1940, Cleveland Indians pitcher Bob Feller became the first and still only pitcher to throw a no-hitter on the opening day of the season. Feller was a 21-year-old veteran at this point, coming off a 24-win season the year prior. He was well known for throwing fastballs by hitters, but he had a little bit of an issue with his control on this day. He walked 5 batters, including 3 in the fourth, to load the bases. But then he struck out Bob Kennedy and he settled down, retiring 15 straight White Sox. Feller's historic effort was nearly dashed in the ninth, but Indians second baseman Ray Mack stopped a hard-hit grounder with a diving stop, and he threw out Taffy Wright to record the final out of the game in a 1-0 Cleveland win over Chicago. The closest a pitcher had come to an opening day no-hitter was back in 1909 when New York Giant Red Ames pitched 9 hitless innings, but with the game tied, he gave up a hit in the 10th. In 1929, it was opening day in New York, and the Yankees and Cleveland Indians wore numbers on the back of their uniforms. After previous attempts at putting numbers on jerseys had been mocked for making the players look like convicts, here in a unified effort with both teams wearing numbers, it finally caught on. It was mostly due to the Yankees being so popular that it actually found its footing. The Yankees used the numbers to correspond to their hitting order, which is why Babe Ruth wore number 3 and Lou Gehrig wore number 4. Interesting fact, many years later, Gehrig became the first player in any sport to ever have his number retired by a team. He is the only Yankee to ever wear the number 4. In 1996, the Chicago Bulls won their 70th game of the season, topping the NBA record of 69 set by the 72 Lakers. Michael Jordan scored a pedestrian 22 in the 86-80 win over Milwaukee. The Bulls would go on to win 72 that season, and that would stand as the record until Golden State won 73 in 2016. And in 1999, NHL great Wayne Gretzky announced his retirement. And today's non-sports, did you know? There is actually an average color to the universe. In a 2002 study, astronomers found that the light coming from galaxies averaged into a beige color that they called cosmic latte. Order that from your local barista today and see what you get. That's all for now. I'll have more tomorrow on This Day in Sports History. This has been an original Thrive Suite production.
Hey there, Sports History fans.
We've got some exciting news to share with you. 6 of our podcasts from the Sports History Network have made it to the final round of voting for the prestigious Sports Podcast Awards. Here are their shows and the categories. Historically Speaking Sports and This Day in Sports History are both competing for Best Sports Talk Podcast. No Nonsense Old School Weightlifting History is in the running for Best Fitness, Health, and Well-Being Podcast. When Football Was Football is up for Best Sports Documentary Podcast. Wrestling with Heels On has entered the ring for Best Wrestling Podcast. And Shoulder Roll Virtual Boxing is fighting for the title for Best Combat Sports Podcast. Now, of course, we need your help to take home the championship for each of these awesome shows. All you gotta do is head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/vote, cast your vote for your favorite shows, or better yet, all 6 of them. Again, every vote counts, and we got to show the world how much sports history really matters. So thank you for your support and making Sports History Network the headquarters for sports yesteryear. But again, don't wait. You got to go vote now. That's over at sportshistorynetwork.com/vote.